This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, April is Autism Awareness Month. The bioneurological developmental disability now affects 1 in 36 children. This according to the National Autism Association, which says that even though it's the fastest growing developmental disorder, it's also the most underfunded.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And we've got a great voice on this, and we're lucky to reach out to him again.
Charlie Massimo is a financial advisor at Wealth Enhancement Group who specializes in planning for families affected by autism. He's also the founder of Autism Communities, which provides independent living opportunities for young adults with autism. Charlie joins us from Blue Point, New York. Charlie, good to have you back with us. How are you?
It's my pleasure. I always appreciate you bringing me back, especially this month.
Yeah, we love it when you join us. Hey, I want to talk a little bit big picture here about what it means to be planning. I mean, everybody is affected by autism. I mean, like I said, 1 in 36 people are affected by this right now. How does it change the financial planning situation for someone?
Oh, drastically. I think what you have to understand, you know, I raised two boys with autism. And you know, just the other day, I met a client. She's 86, and she's still raising her 67-year-old son with autism. Wow. This is lifelong.
Yeah.
So for many of us, we have our children. They grow. They take care of themselves. They're out and doing their own thing, earning their own living. Not so when you're raising a child with autism. So not only do you have to figure out how do I care for my child with autism, and that costs, you know, the estimate is about $2.5 million over the life of a child with autism, and how do I then fund my own retirement. So it's a significant challenge for these families.
Charlie, one of the things that I appreciate when you come on, and I think our whole audience does, is that you do give some insight into the world of autism and understand it from a level that most do not. Having said that, autism is a spectrum, right? And I do always wonder how many individuals are living with autism that are able to support themselves in some way or live on their own. How many are not? Do we have some understanding of that breakdown?
Well, it's a great point, Carol. And you know, the thing about autism, sometimes you don't know what the capabilities of your son or daughter may be till later on. But to put it in somewhat perspective, 68% of the population of autism are unemployed for their entire life. 68%.
Wow.
So yeah. That's a pretty large number. And some of it is not due to their inability to work. It's just employees don't really understand the value or how to relate to them so they can be a valuable part of their firm or company. But the reality is 68% are not earning any money and rely solely on some governmental supports and whatever the family can supplement those needs with.
Well, as you mentioned, Charlie, the costs of caring for a child with autism ranges in the millions of dollars, can reach the millions of dollars over the lifetime of the child. If people don't necessarily have the financial means to do this, what are their options?
Yeah, great point. Again, their options are to understand the resources available. Fortunately, through Medicaid, there is a lot of federal funding. It takes some legwork. It takes some research. But there is a lot of money available through Medicaid, through Social Security. So the first thing I ask a family or tell a family, have you researched all the governmental entitlements that are available for your son or daughter? Because your point is well taken. The vast majority of the population can't afford $2.5 million to raise their son or daughter with autism, then figure out how to plan for their own retirement. So it's really, the entitlements are very, very important.
In terms of, I'm curious about kind of the working component too, to, like you said, that there's a lot of folks that, maybe there are employers out there that, right, could certainly employ individuals with autism. How do we kind of figure that one out, that component, that piece?
Yeah, that's been a challenge for a long time. And
yeah,
there are companies like Microsoft, there are companies like Panera, and others that have found a way by, and this is where AI is going to become a big part mm-hmm. for this population, because through AI programs, they're learning how to communicate with the autism population in the workforce. And I'm really excited about that component, but it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of training to support these young men and women with autism and how to fit them in. But I will tell you this, you talk to these firms that have employed those on the spectrum, and they all tell you they have a valuable part of the workforce, and they're incredibly productive when they learn how to communicate and learn how to assimilate them into their company.
And Charlie, one thing I was really surprised to find when I was doing research for this is that, according to the National Autism Association, it's still significantly underfunded, even though it's increasingly common in this day and age. How do you explain that?
You know, Tim, right? If you think, look at the projections, next year it's projected that autism will cost this country $461 billion. That's about, what, 2% or so of the GDP.
Wow.
And you're right. It is probably one of the areas that the government is not looking at. I mean, there's only so many places you can pull from. And now what's happening is they're putting the burden back on the families, and they're saying, hey, we'll give you the dollars, but you need to manage these dollars yourself. And that creates a whole nother challenge in itself. So, but you're right, the government is not looking at this strong enough.
So Charlie, in your experience, since this started to be part of your life, has awareness increased? Has funding increased? Has a government understanding increased? Or has it gone the other way?
No, certainly awareness has increased. When my boys were diagnosed in 2001, I never even heard of autism. But now I can't have a conversation with one person and bring up autism, and they say, oh, I know somebody with autism. So awareness is significantly increased, and diagnosis has significantly increased. So those things are great, are happening. But again, there are parts, the financial aspect is just not being addressed in a strong enough fashion, and it has to be, or this is going to become an epidemic for the country that's going to get ahead of itself or get too far ahead of itself that we're never going to be able to figure it out.
Help me understand the financial aspect. Is it the overall cost that you find that we've got to kind of figure out? Because you do seem to say that there's money provided for individuals, but it's on the owner, you know, then for them to kind of figure out how to do it all. I mean, if you could change a couple of things overnight, Charlie, what would you do?
If I could change, I'd make more of the
beyond
therapies.
No kids having to deal with autism, I'm assuming would be number one, but.
Well, yeah, of course. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen. But I think I would have more of these therapies, because what happens is once you get to the age of 21 and over 21, a lot of the services that were covered prior to 21 are no longer covered.
Huh.
Right. So I'd like to see a lot of these health insurance companies realize that these therapies are lifelong, speech, OT, PT. These are lifelong therapies that have to be part of these child or these adults' mm-hmm. lives. And it's just not covered, or a lot of it is not covered. So the first thing I would do is look at the healthcare system and say, we got to address this in a much more aggressive manner. Then the second part, I would really figure out with HUD, how do we make affordable housing available? Because we can't have these young men and women living with their families until their families die or until their parents die. But depending on where you live in this country, it's just unaffordable for this to happen. So I will look at HUD to create better programs to make housing affordable for those with intellectual disabilities.
Well, that's where I want to end with your work that you've been doing at Autism Communities. Can you just talk a little bit about what you created? Just about a decade ago at this point, Charlie?
Yeah, it's not just Autism Communities. It's so many other associations that we've been part of. But I think the goal is working with developers and taking these affordable units within these developments that they're building and then setting them aside for those with intellectual disabilities. So instead of paying market rate, we've gone to the developers and say, can we reserve a couple of your units and put them for low-income housing? And that certainly helps or goes toward making it more affordable. So we're looking to work with more developers to create more of these housing or affordable housing units for those on the spectrum.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. All right, Charlie, so good to check in with you. Be well. Charlie Massimo, financial advisor at Wealth Enhancement Group, excuse me, as we said, specializing in planning for families affected by autism. He's also the founder of Autism Communities, joining us there from Blue Point, New York.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the contribution of Latinos to the U.S. economy rose to $3.2 trillion in 2021. It would rank fifth in the world if the group were an independent country, just behind Germany and ahead of the U.K. and India. This, according to a report released last fall. So, Carol, compared with the world's biggest economies, U.S. Latino GDP was the third fastest growing economy during the decade ending in 2021, behind China and India. This, I should note, all from a Bloomberg story back in September.
Yeah, I feel like Bloomberg does a lot of reporting about this, about the importance of following the Latin community, certainly here in the United States, as consumers, as brands, just everything, politics.
I was going to say a political block, too.
Very, very important. Members of the group, though, face pay inequality, stereotyping, Tim, and also underrepresentation, though, still in the workplace.
Coqual is a nonprofit think tank that is working to change that. The group, in its own words, has a mission to, quote, address bias and uncover barriers to advancement for underrepresented populations in the workplace. Linnea Irvin is the CEO of Coqual. She joins us from New York City. Linnea, how are you?
Well, it's great to see you all. I'm delighted to be here. I'm well. Thank you.
So the big question that I think I have is how can this be addressed? How can you address bias and uncover barriers to advancement specifically for this group?
Right. You know, you set it up, in your earlier statements. There's tremendous economic opportunity here. And I think that, denying not only the strength of the consumer, the brands, but also the entrepreneur base that is found within this cohort is a huge risk, I think, for the U.S. economy. And I think what we see in the work environment is that there's an opportunity to invite Hispanic and Latino professionals into the work environment to deliver their best selves, their most brilliant contributions to business, without requiring them to perhaps hide these burdens to cover up their heritage, their backgrounds in order to advance in the work environment. And that's what we're seeing.
Is there something different from, we often talk about this, that individuals in the workforce, we embrace diversity, and yet there's still a lot of individuals who don't feel like they can embrace their diversity, if you will, or their differences when it comes. Is it something different for the Latino community, other than if it was Black Americans or LGBTQ? Just curious.
I mean, again, obviously nuance in studying this group, but yes, it is different. There's tremendous intense othering around things such as language and accent, and so there's a different pressure to cover with this group. There's discouragement from speaking one's language in the workforce. We see actually barriers to advancement, slower rates of advancement, and pay inequities for those who speak Spanish as a first language, for example, versus those who speak English as a first language. And we do think that there's opportunity here, to resolve this, because ultimately, look, if you have an individual who speaks Mandarin or speaks French or speaks Spanish in the work environment, that actually is valuable when you think about hopping on a flight to a client and or ensuring messaging to your user.
There's a reason why many colleges have language requirements, right?
Absolutely.
It's an incredible asset to be able to speak multiple languages.
No, it's a really good point, right? I mean, that's an asset.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, Well, so what do you think the business environment continues to get wrong, or what could they do better specifically in terms of programs or initiatives?
Well, one thing I will say before I hop into that, because I think it's really important, sure. Women are really bearing the brunt here. We find that Hispanic and Latina women, in addition to caregiving burdens and things of that nature, they're twice as likely to feel that the way that they're compensated, right, their pay, does not sufficiently allow them to support their dependents. And we're talking white collar professionals here, right? This is what we study. They're far more likely to feel career stalled than their male counterparts within the Hispanic and Latino community. You know, where there is board representation, 5% of corporate boards, Fortune 500, the seats are held by Hispanic and Latino professionals, but only 1% of those are women. And so we're really seeing disparities in this particular study in the data as it relates to Hispanic and Latino women that should not go without being called out. But I would say there are a few things that companies can do very quickly. It's along the engage, invest, and then ultimately disrupt some structural barriers. Engage means invite the employee into the conversation. Far too often we see, and we hear from leaders and professionals, and they say, you know what, leaders just often fail to ask the basics. What are the obstacles you're facing in the workplace, right? And how can I help you to overcome them, right? So in some cases, it makes it a lot easier to get at what the most pressing barriers are by just asking the community. And then from an investment standpoint, we think it's extraordinarily important to not only invest in recruitment, but also development, right? Strengthening your sponsorship offerings, looking at how you can deepen skill sets and on-the-job experiences within your teams so that you can cultivate that pipeline for leadership. And hopefully, you know, we see a pipeline long-term that better reflects the future workforce, because this is nearly 20% of the U.S. population. And we do know, you know, it's inevitable demographically that, you know, this will be a part of our leadership as well.
Linnea, I feel like we can't have this conversation right now without talking about the charged political environment that we find ourselves in. And I'm wondering how right now that if you found anything in the research that Coqwell did in terms of the way that this is now such a charged topic here in the U.S., given that immigration is in focus, given that what's happening at the border is in focus, given that migrants being bused into different cities around the country is in focus. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, absolutely. It showed up in our data. It showed up in the qualitative, in the stories that so many professionals shared. 1 in 5 of our respondents, so 21% essentially, have had and have on a regular basis colleagues, you know, share kind of negative things about, you know, immigrants and immigration. And again, these things don't typically come up in one's daily workplace, but they're twice as likely to have colleagues, you know, kind of repeat this rhetoric and make comments around undocumented people. And it's a real alienating experience for them, regardless if immigration is a part of their story. In some cases, they're second generation or third generation Hispanic and Latinos. You know, it is something that, especially in election year, it's something that they're acutely aware of, right? Because
Linnea,
they know the rhetoric is going to continue to bubble up in the coming quarters.
Really appreciate you joining us. That's Linnea Irvin, CEO of Coqwell.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.